The collapse of my first marriage. Jenny and I were very different people. Intellectually, we were worlds apart. I was ambitious, whereas she could be happy with a life of mediocrity. She had no outside interests. She could be happy as a housewife, except she didn't like to clean and couldn't cook. She paid little attention to world news, but there wasn't a thing she didn't know about all the soap operas. She was an authority on them. While I was burying myself in my work trying to get somewhere, she was content to go nowhere. Having said all this, Jenny was fantastic when we were struggling. She never complained about the lack of groceries or not being able to buy new clothes. She handled the tough times extremely well, and she was very accommodating when it came to my family. Towards the end of 1982, the year in which we were married, my parents decided to sell their business and move to Durban. My mother had always loved the sea and wanted to live there. There was only one problem. My younger brother, Mark, was about to enter his matric year, grade 12. Mark was the joker in our pack, definitely not the academic. He was the friendly rebel who drove my parents and the rest of his family nuts with his antics. A person with a better heart you would never meet, but he could be an absolute handful. He'd always looked up to me, and in many ways, I have been his mentor. In fact, I have probably been the only person that he would ever listen to. But more often than not, he would still do his own thing. I agreed to take him in so that my parents could pursue their dream. This meant getting a bigger apartment, so Jenny and I moved to Townsview, and Mark moved in. It was an interesting year that followed. I was trying to persuade Mark to study, which was as challenging as trying to persuade a male dog to ignore a female dog on heat. He had his motorbike, he lived with his older brother, his parents were 600 kilometres away. For him, this was utopia. The records say that he managed to pass matric, grade 12, although nobody knows how this happened. He then went on to his two-year paid vacation, courtesy of the South African Army. And believe me, his was a vacation. He was posted to a nearby base and spent more time at home than away. He was never offered the exotic tour to the Southwest African border. In fact, I still wonder if he ever learned to shoot his rifle. We decided that living in an apartment was not ideal, so we looked for a house to move into. We eventually found one in Kibler Park, a suburb quite far south. I was back to travelling again. In the meantime, my sister's marriage was going through a difficult time, so she moved in with us. Next thing, she was patching things up with John Travolta, and he too all but moved in. Mark was doing his army bit, but would join us over the weekends. We were one big happy family. Did I say Jenny was really accommodating when it came to my family? But things were destined to get better. It was around this time that a friend mentioned to me that he had seen Irene, and after less than 2 years of marriage, she had divorced her pilot husband. I was sad for her, yet inwardly there was no doubting that I was happy, as she had finally caught the wrong flight. That she'd made the wrong choice. Served her right for dumping me. My parents had started a clothing store in Durban as part of their early retirement. Sadly, after about a year or two, it fell apart, and they lost their life savings. My father couldn't find suitable work, so they had to pack up and come back to Johannesburg. Guess where they stayed? We then had my parents, as well as my sister and her lover boy. Things were getting pretty crowded. It is a misconception that only the black population can be regarded as squatters in South Africa. Our house was living proof of that. It was then, in the midst of all these bodies living in one house, that we decided to have a child. Perhaps this was a subtle message for all of them to move out. We had now been married for 2 years. Although the house was full, we had luckily managed to retain our own room. It wasn't too long before Jenny was pregnant. I think the squatters got the message, and slowly the house became more spacious. My parents got themselves a home, and I gladly handed responsibility for my brother back to them. He was still in the army, but spent a lot of time at home. Linda and Loverboy broke up, and she also moved in with my parents. At some stage during Jenny's pregnancy, we decided to move again. Exactly why, I'm not sure, but we did. We rented a house in the suburb of Mulbarton. And 9 months later, we had a son, Brett, who was born on the 11th of October, 1984. I was 23 years old and a proud father. Up until the time that Brett was born, Jenny's parents were still not interested in mending the rift. Despite Jenny's best efforts, they would not budge. When Brett was born, things changed, as he was their first grandchild. It was fantastic. They were becoming family again. Jenny was now in her element. She could be at home all day looking at her baby, watching soap operas and putting on weight. And me? I was doing the only thing I knew. I was working. At that stage, we had a few computer dealers who sold our software. Whenever they got serious prospects or concluded any sales, it would be necessary to help them. One of the dealers was based in Newcastle in Natal. They had a young lady by the name of Sandy working for them, and before I knew it, I was having an affair with her. This was my first affair, and the timing, well, it could not have been worse. I suppose I could find all sorts of reasons and excuses to account for the affair, but I guess that is irrelevant. It didn't last long, but it caused enough harm and pain. When Jenny found out, she moved back to her parents, and when I came to my senses, we managed to sort things out. What I learned from this experience was, once again, the trust that had been broken is impossible to get back to normal. Humans are able to forgive, eventually. But don't we ever forget? Things were okay, but never great. Our contrasting lifestyles and ambitions dictated as much. In an effort to improve things, we decided to have another child, and we had a daughter, Shayna, who was born on the 24th of July, 1987. Things did not improve. In fact, we drifted even further apart. It was about 6 months after Shayna was born that Cedric and I sold our company, and I was faced with the alternative of cancelling the contract or buying him out. Adios, amigo. This was not the only partnership that was dissolving. My marriage was over, but I was not doing anything about it. I continued to focus on my work, either by choice or necessity, probably both. I had now parted ways with our most experienced programmer, and I had to fill that gap. I had joined a large IT group so that we could grow the business on a national basis. So I had to create new offices in the other major cities. I had tough performance targets to meet in order to earn the profit share bonuses that I had negotiated. I was working my butt off. I had every reason or excuse in the book to work the long hours and ignore my collapsing marriage at home. But in the meantime, I had used some of the money that I had made selling my company to buy our first house that we could call our own. At least we weren't paying rent. We were paying a mortgage bond. In the process of identifying potential staff members for our new offices, I was advised to speak to a lady by the name of Annie. She lived in Durban, had extensive experience with a company that was one of our competitors, but she had recently resigned and was due to go on an extended holiday in America. She was flying from Durban via Johannesburg. I arranged to meet with her a few hours before she flew out of Johannesburg. I was impressed. She had considerable knowledge of the retail industry, point-of-sale equipment we used, and our largest competitor's software, which was similar but not as good as our own. She was confident and eloquent. I had no doubt that she would be the ideal person to head up our Durban branch. There was only one snag. All she was concerned with at the time was her vacation, so she wasn't too interested in discussing career opportunities. We agreed to have a chat when she got back, and we would take it from there. In the 3 months that Annie was away, I continued to search for staff for our Durban office. I found potential salesmen, software support personnel, but nobody whom I felt suitable for the branch manager position. When she returned, we met again, and she agreed to take on the position. I was relieved, as I was confident that she had the right credentials for the position. A few months later, we had our Cape Town and Durban offices running reasonably well, but unfortunately, these branches required a lot of my time. I was called on to assist in their sales presentations, meet the new customers, as well as train the new support staff on the latest versions of the software that I was extensively involved in writing. It became the norm that I would spend a few days every other week in Durban or Cape Town. I was clocking up frequent flyer miles at a rapid rate, and the more time I spent with Annie, the more I grew attracted to her. She was everything that Jenny wasn't. She was intelligent, outgoing, well-travelled. She had a good general knowledge, and she was ambitious. It wasn't long before I recognised that the feeling was mutual. It was almost amusing how we tried to hide our feelings. We said nothing about it for a very long time, but I suppose it was inevitable. We eventually became involved. I was confused. I knew my marriage was doomed. I knew it would never work, as Jenny and I were worlds apart. That wasn't right or wrong. It just was. I was torn between my guilt of having a wife and two small children with whom I spent little time and having this new excitement and love in my life. I didn't know what to do. For some months, this uncomfortable status quo remained as it was. I didn't want to hurt Jenny, but I didn't want to lose Annie. But I knew that sooner or later, I would have to make a decision. Obviously, the distance between Durban and Johannesburg made things more difficult. I suppose, in a way, I wanted to make sure that I made the right decision, but in order for me to do so, I needed to spend more time with Annie. I had to make sure that I was in love with her and not what she represented, everything that my wife was not. Besides my scheduled trips to Durban, I made a few unscheduled ones as well. I used to play golf on Sundays and Jenny would spend the day with her family. I would not normally get back before 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so I sacrificed this time to make a quick trip to Durban. I would book an early morning flight to Durban and return on the afternoon flight. This gave me a few precious hours to spend with Annie. On one particular Sunday morning, I was running late, and in my rush, I forgot to put my golf clubs in the car. Like an idiot, I had left them in the lounge near the front door. I realized this halfway to the airport, but it was too late to go back. I figured I would make up an excuse if Jenny happened to spot them. For some reason, she didn't. So my shenanigans were to remain a secret for a little longer. At the best of times, I'm not an easy person to live with. When I am under huge business pressure and stress, not to mention my personal turmoil, then I guess I must have been a nightmare. I was short-tempered, I was tired, I was feeling guilty. With all these emotions churning away inside me, I was the proverbial time bomb. And finally, I did. It was on a Saturday evening. Can't recall what pathetic little reason caused it. But I went crazy. I decided then and there that I'd had to get out. I told Jenny I was leaving for a few days and I did not know when I would be back. She was distraught. At that time, there was little she was capable of doing on her own. Much to my annoyance, she depended on me for virtually everything. I packed a small bag, got into my car and drove off. It was 8 o'clock and I had no idea where to go. On the spur of the moment, I decided to phone Annie. I called her at her house from a phone booth. I decided I would go there and told her I would be there in about 6 hours. For some reason, other than the fact that I am a speed junkie, I drove like the wind. The roads were quiet and I made it in 3 hours, 55 minutes. This is an incredible time for the journey, since there were not that many toll roads back in 1989. I guess that the speed forced me to concentrate on the road and not think about the minefield that I had created for myself. I spent the rest of the weekend with Annie. On the Monday morning, I decided I wasn't ready to go back to the real world, so I called my secretary and told her to clear my diary for the next couple of days. There was panic at work. I wasn't around and nobody could get hold of me. It was at this time that I was able to recognize the world that I had created for myself. Everybody depended on me, be it at work or at home. Everybody panicked when I wasn't around. This was crazy. I realized that I was extremely poor at delegating responsibility, training or mentoring other people. I had created this custom-fitted noose for my own neck. With hindsight, I can see now that I enjoyed the power that this gave me. I believed I was indispensable, and to tell the truth, at the time, I was. I also realized how pathetic my ways were. I vowed to change them. At the time, I believed that knowledge is power, but what I've learned since is that true power comes from the sharing of knowledge. I made my decision to leave my wife for Annie. I took the next 5 days off and spent time with her while I figured out how I was going to tell my wife. Jenny always had low self-esteem, which had become worse since, by her own choice, she had abandoned her life and her independence to dump this responsibility on me. We had many arguments over the years about her getting her act together, but to no avail. In fact, she only got her driver's license when she was 25 years old. It was easier to rely on me to give her lifts everywhere. I have to accept a large portion of the blame because I should have put my foot down, but perhaps her reliance on me made me feel more powerful. I decided I couldn't tell her that I was leaving her for someone else, as I felt that this would further destroy the little self-confidence she had. I decided to tell her what we both knew to be true, that our marriage wasn't working and it was never going to. At first, I think Jenny believed me, but one truism is that you cannot hide the truth. It eventually came out and things started getting messy. We were married in community of property, so she was entitled to half of what I owned. Because by nature I am a generous person, I had originally said to Jenny that she could have the house and the contents. Granted, we did not have that much at that stage, but still I was prepared to give her everything. The only proviso I made was that she could not touch my business interests. The nature of the agreement that I had when we sold the business was that I would have a 5-year earn-out period during which, if the business achieved certain targets, I would be paid certain percentages of the profits. There was absolutely no guarantee that I would get anything. I felt it unfair that she should participate in my future earnings if we were already divorced. I told her that if she attempted to claim any of my future earnings, then I would only give her what she was entitled to, which was half of our current assets. She agreed, but her parents and her attorney got involved, and they persuaded her to go for me. In the end, she lost, and she got what she was entitled to, half of our assets. To make matters worse for her, this sum had been eroded by the ridiculously high legal fees she had to pay, as her attorney was so useless that he couldn't blow his nose without asking a senior advocate to hold the tissue for him. We were divorced in February 1991. While all this was happening, I had been offered a position on the main board of directors of our holding company. This company was the listed entity on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, as it was known then. I was already the managing director of the company that I ran, but to be a main board director was a greater honor and achievement. After all, I was only 28 years old. I'm pretty certain that at that time, if I was not the youngest director of a JSE-listed company, then I must have been close. I was elated. I had worked all my life for this recognition. At the time, I thought about giving Irene's father a call. I thought I had progressed a little beyond a clothing salesman. But like his daughter, I too was also divorced. I chose not to do this, as I wasn't proving anything to anyone else. It was about proving it to myself. So at the end of my first marriage, what exactly had I achieved? I was 28 years old, I was divorced, I had 2 young children, I had a new lover, I had a business that was succeeding but still needed a lot of work, and I was a director of a JSE-listed company. Does this qualify as success? At the time, I didn't know. But I was not about to give up. Lessons learned. 39. Living a double life, especially as a result of an illicit affair, is extremely stressful, and your behavior patterns change so radically that it is easy for outsiders to observe that something is amiss. 40. Never lie or try to hide the truth, as the truth will always prevail. 41. Try to identify your weaknesses and acknowledge them as early as possible. They are part of your makeup as much as you have eyes to see and ears to hear. 42. Sharing knowledge and wisdom is far greater and more powerful and rewarding than trying to retain it for your own exclusive use. 43. Greed is destructive. Only take or receive what is fair. If you try to take more than you are due, you may end up with less.